enjoy my ass.
Dr. Freeman, I presume.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Friend Request. I am, as ever, Colin Detmar from Scanline Media.
And I'm Jennifer Unkle, also from Scanline Media.
And we are here once again to talk to you about some of the best relationships in video game fiction. We have another pair for you this week, and we're going to start off with one that's kind of... The problem with it is how literal of a relationship there is, right?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Gordon Freeman and Alex Vance from Half-Life 2, and obviously it's two episodes as well. I think we both played a lot of Half-Life, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I tended to skip around the Ravenholm sections using cheat codes for a while when I was little, but I played I played those games pretty regularly, yeah.
Man, it's bizarre to me to think of playing the Half-Life games when you're little. I mean, the Half-Life 1, I guess I did, but Half-Life 2, I was about to go into college when,
oh, wow.
When Orange Box came out, because I didn't have a PC, so I couldn't play it till it came out on console.
Oh, okay. I played it, like, right when it came out.
No, sure. And if I'd played it right when it came out, yeah, I'm sure I would have. But it's just weird to think, because I've always thought of it without thinking, I guess, subconsciously considered it to be a game that you played around that age. But, of course, that's neither here nor there. So this relationship, I mean, Half-Life 2 as a whole is, I mean, I think it's a superb game. And I think its elements all worked well at the time, but various parts of them have aged better or worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the parts that I think has aged the worst is the relationships between the player and the characters, especially Alex, because Freeman in that game is a sort of a silent protagonist savior. He just sort of, you know, shows up and does his thing. He never says a word. He's a man of action and a few words. And that, like, that idea kind of works as far as, like, him being this, like, guerrilla warrior and, like, one-man army. Like, sure, okay. He doesn't talk about it. He just goes and takes care of the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with person-to-person relationships, it doesn't work. And I think, like, I was about late high school when I played Half-Life 2. But I still wasn't thinking super critically about games at the time, and so I didn't really think about the Alex and Freeman relationship when I first played through the game. I just sort of, you know, was like, oh, hey, here's this lady, and she seems to think I'm cool, and she seems cool, and this is great. But that relationship is... I hesitate to say screwed up, because that seems a little extreme, but the execution of it makes it problematic. In that Alex thinks you're the best. She thinks you're a hero, and she seems to think you're pretty cute as well or something. There's some like, non-committally flirty stuff going on.
Then Eli's trying to get you two to hook up throughout the series as well.
Yeah, and, like, you know, as sort of the way dads do, where you're, like, sort of joking and sort of not. And that's all would be fine if Freeman ever engaged in the slightest. And instead, it's like she's flirting with this robot marching about, and it's just kind of creepy. I don't know.
There could have been room to explore, like, this person has been idolized, and she's never met this person, but she's heard all these stories about this supposed savior of Black Mesa, and there could have been an interesting dynamic about actually meeting that person in the flesh and realizing that they are, yes, just a person, but they don't even touch that at all.
Yeah, and also, I don't think you need, like, I don't know how you would execute on a romance with a silent protagonist who, like, whose only verbs are traversal and murder. And I guess some puzzle solving, but there's nothing social. Like, Link is a silent protagonist, but Link still, like, gestures and emotes, right? Freeman does not. Or at least as far as we as players are aware. Maybe if we cut into third person, you would see on Freeman's face that he's just like, what? All the time. I don't know. But as far as the player is concerned, Freeman is a murder bot. And it works for the story that is concerned with murder and puzzle solving. Where fighting matters, that works. But having this relationship that is like, you know, like, poking at the idea of romantic with a person who has never spoken to you or acknowledged your existence, other than, I guess, once they helped you not die, really uncomfortable and sort of illustrates what Alex was always created to be in that game, which is that she's this character to sort of, like, make you feel comfortable in the world. She's there on occasion to deliver exposition and narrative, and she's there to make you feel good about yourself because she thinks you're cute.
Yeah.
And that's not great.
There's a lot about Half-Life 2 that feels very specifically like a shallow tech demo, even if it's a great game. Like the... Mm-hmm. Very specifically with the way that you interact with other people. It's never about getting to know them. It's more about... it's never about a two-way interpersonal interaction. It's just about watching this model follow you with their eyes and emote, essentially. It feels like the game that a graphics card manufacturer would make to show off their new technology in whenever a cutscene plays.
Yeah, you're totally not wrong, and it's incredibly well executed, which those games are not. As we say, we think that's a great game. But, you know, like, I mean, let's not go too far into speculation, but a part of me wonders if one of the reasons they haven't done a Half-Life 3 is because in modern times, looking back at what Half-Life 2 was moving the series towards, how do you do that and not make it super awkward in an era where, like, the writing in games is getting... I mean, you could argue... I think I would argue better, but that's kind of... That's subjective, right? But I think it's pretty... I think most people would agree that the writing is certainly getting more human in games. Games are getting more interested in people and relationships and how that can be weird and awkward and great. Certainly than we were in 2004. And... how do you take this game that has set itself up, like, Half-Life 2 compared to Half-Life 1 is way more interested in people, but it actually doesn't do a good job of expressing that, and how do you make a game in 2017 or 2016 or 15 or 14 where it's like, oh, it's a follow-up on all these themes, but we once again have a silent protagonist whose adjectives are pick up, open, smash, shoot, and jump. It just seems like an impossible task to me.
Yeah, Portal kind of skirted around that by being mostly about comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't work out so well when you're actually trying to get across some sort of drama between one person to the next.
Yeah, I feel like that's... silent protagonists are a dying breed in big budget games, anyway. And I feel like certainly this year we've seen it executed really well in Breath of the Wild, where there is, I'm not going to spoil, but like there's a reason Link is mute in that game, and I found it pretty effective. But it does mean that like they have to rely pretty heavily on Link's facial emotions and gestures in conversations to make stuff happen, and you can't do that in first person.
Indeed. But,
so, all of those things are why that relationship is enjoyable as you play through it, but looking at it more seriously is kind of uncomfortable and unsettling.
Yeah. Alex mostly has things happen to her instead mm-hmm. of taking much... She doesn't have much ambition on her own, more or less. there are moments where she'll pull you out of somewhere or do something like that, but for the most part, she's just a person that exists, so you're not in total silence for however many hours you spend playing it.
Except for that soundtrack, which is killer.
Yeah, pretty good soundtrack.
So what did you bring for us today, Jen?
So I'm here to talk about Junpei and Akane, and I'm going to try and do my best to talk about them without getting into too many spoilers, since I'm one of the several Zero Escape fans that is really eager for everyone to play Zero Escape with as little going in as possible. The thing that really drives me about Junpei and Akane, Junpei is kind of the protagonist for the first game, so you're mostly seeing him from a first-person perspective. But you do get a sense, unlike Alex, he basically talks to Akane several times. He's childhood friends with her. And one of the key moments that pretty much defines their relationship is a moment when, before the game even happens, they're in middle school. They're being tasked to watch over this rabbit hutch. And one morning, Akane just comes in and all of the rabbits are dead. Someone ended up killing them all overnight. Junpei comes in and comforts her and makes a promise to her that they will stay by the rabbit hutch as long as it takes to find and reprimand the killers. They end up spending the entire weekend, more or less, just sitting by this rabbit hutch waiting for the killer to reappear. And while they never do reappear, it does create this sense, this strong bond between the two, where you get the sense that both of them would go to the ends of the earth to both assist each other and more or less fight for their sense of justice. And that really carries throughout all three games. Some ways more... In some of the games, this is a bit more of a reveal than others, but there's this sense that no matter where the story goes or what predicaments lie ahead of them, they pretty much breach all sense of time and space to continue searching for one another and to be together. And normally that does get a bit cheesy from time to time, especially since since Akane, or they call her June several times in the first game just to do a secret identity sort of situation. She does love to hit you with puns, call you jumpy, and just... they act pretty goofy towards one another. And the narrative gets really, really silly as it becomes more and more complicated. But there's still this really base sort of attachment between the two that really captures the imagination and wants you to... makes you wish that things will work out for them no matter what.
Yeah. I really enjoyed their relationship in 999, that first game. I have my problems with Junpei as a character in that game. But that's related to him, not related to this relationship, which was, yeah, one of the things that sort of kept you grounded in the game was, like, grounded in the video game and also grounded in the in-canon game that was happening, which was like, okay, well, we've all got to make a choice here, and I don't know what any of these choices mean, but this choice will put me in a better position to protect Akane, so okay. Or just, you know, be around her, you know? And I felt like that was a good way to give both, you know, player and the character the player was inhabiting a motive and a thing to be invested in that game.
Yeah, there's no question that over time, depending on which time we're talking about, Junpei can be kind of a gigantic jerk. Mm-hmm. Very selfish, especially in the third game. His position is often, I've seen some shit over my years, and I'm letting that make me into a serious killjoy that is lashes out at others, even their best friend. But there is a sense of softening throughout that game as well, where he kind of redeems himself more or less from the jerkiness that he displayed earlier.
Yeah. I think there's some... I don't want to talk too much. We're trying to avoid spoilers, so I don't want to talk too much about their relationship in 2, but it's actually more central to things than you might think playing it through. By the end, you're like, oh, okay, I see. And I found it really, like, that was in a game that I don't like very much. I don't like VLR, Virtue's Last Reward, very much. But that was one of the few things in it that I genuinely was just like, this is really nice. I really enjoy this little arc in the game.
Yeah, in a game filled with one or two or maybe five too many twists, the things that they reveal about that relationship in the context of VLR are really sweet and pretty emotional at times.
Mm-hmm. And then the relationship in Zero Time Dilemma, the third and, at this point, final game, we'll see, I guess, is... It's hard because I have... It's, again, one of those situations where I have a beef with a character but not the relationship as much, and I don't know how much to let that affect things, because Junpei in that game feels like a different character than the previous two games. And as you say, near the end, it's sort of there's a softening and you see more. It's like, oh, okay, there's old Junpei. But I feel like the way he is acting and behaving at the beginning of the game feels really unearned the narrative to me. And it makes me look a little more negatively on that relationship, because it's just like, oh, but now he's all mad at Akane all the time. And it's like, without spoiling, I mean, if you were willing to go through what you went through in VLR and still be her cheerleader, then I think probably you should shut up. Because this is nothing compared to what happened in VLR. You know?
Yeah. There are reasons why I slightly disagree with that interpretation, sure. But again, even mentioning why would be a pretty gigantic spoiler, so I'm going to back off of that.
It's a series with a lot of twists and turns, and I do think, even when it doesn't seem like it is, you'll find out that sort of the core of each game, to an extent anyway, VLR diverts from this more, but like, Akane and Junpei are at the core of every game and sort of the emotional heart of it, and yeah, it's kind of... I feel like there's a dynamic of Akane being fairly like manipulative and high-minded, but in pursuit of good goals, and I feel like Junpei has to pretty frequently forgive her for that, because it is kind of shitty.
But yeah.
He has his own problems, and ultimately their relationship is one of the good things.
Yeah, getting back so much to the rabbit hutch, I feel like that event pretty much foreshadows how Junpei Akane is willing to go to the ends of the earth to basically see her own sort of justice out, and Junpei will often join her out of both a strong bond and the idea that whatever she's doing is probably for the best in some way.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, and it's kind of, you know, it's not a big deal that we have to dwell on a bunch, but I really enjoy how, like, I mean, if you're not familiar with the series, you could listen to this and be like, oh, okay, so Junpei is constantly rescuing Akane, right? And it's like, nah, Akane does not need Junpei's help. Akane has shit under control. She is one of the more competent and kind of terrifyingly powerful people in the series. And, it's a good dynamic where there's sort of that social, side of it, which is like, oh no, you're in trouble and I have to help you. But there's sort of the undertone of like, but really I have to help you because you set things in motion for me to help you, because goddamn.
Yeah. Most of the series is in service of providing... most of the series is in service of fulfilling her goals, but in a way that's like, okay, you got me, but I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah. I think that'll do it for this episode of Friend Request. This is sort of the third episode here, and we're still getting going, so apologies if we're a little awkward, a little uncertain about the form here, but, we're getting there, and I'm excited for many more.
Yeah, it's been a blast to do all these.
Yeah. So I want to let you know, we did say at the top, we are part of Scanline Media. That's a website that is currently me and Jen, and then occasional guests. If you want to check out some of our writing there, or if you want to check out other podcasts we do, you can go to scanlinemedia.com. And if you want to chip in and help us, get new equipment or more games to cover or something like that, you can go to patreon.com/scanlinemedia. Any money you give is used for the site. None of it goes into our pockets. I want to give a big thank you to Krista Lee for use of her track Hearts Burning Bright, which is our intro music. It's off of the album Welcome to the Fantasy Zone. You can find it on Bandcamp at opoorpup.bandcamp.com. And there are a lot of other bangers on there that I recommend checking out. And thanks everybody for joining us. We will see you next episode.
Later.